more like the Martha in the story. And the Marys kind of languish and kind of, in our society, tend to be or to wear the label of laziness, and that's not true at all. But they're comprised differently than the Marthas, of course. And so you find it perhaps a reason to be stressed out when you come into contact with people who might be a little bit different than you. What are the sources of stress that we have? Well, I tried to come up with an answer to that question this past week. In fact, I began to ask a number of different people what the sources of stress are that they face. And then I tried to categorize. I tried to extrapolate or pull back the layers of the onion and try and find the core, if you will. What are the core reasons that we experience stress in our day-to-day walks? And we're going to really go high-tech here. And the first thing that seemed to come up time and again when I talked to people is this, that one of the root causes of stress that they face is the pressure or relationships and the pressure to get along with everyone. And probably you can identify with that, whether it's at work or whether it's in school, whether it's at church. You find it difficult, you find it stressful to try to get along with everyone. You know that you're supposed to, but you're not so sure that you can handle that. You also find it a matter of stress when you try to be liked by everyone. That's a pastoral problem oftentimes. We try to do our utmost to get along with everybody, and it doesn't always work. And it does tend to be a matter of stress for us when it doesn't happen. And then the third thing that we're going to look at under the causes of stress with regards to relationship is that there is a pressure to accept others in spite of the differences. And I've already alluded to that, and so did the ladies in the drama with Mary and Martha. So what are the root causes of stress that you and I face that cause us oftentimes to turn to whatever it might be? And one of the great growth industries in our world or in our society is stress management. Now, stress management comes in a variety of different ways as well, whether it's a seminar that you take, whether it happens to be the new massage therapy that you have to have on occasion. Perhaps it's medication, prescription medication. Constantly we find that there is a need for people to try to manage the stress that they're feeling by turning to doctors and to medical science and medications. Others turn to medications that are not prescription, whether it be drugs of some nature or alcohol. And so the concept of how to manage stress is one that is perpetually before us in our society. Now, we're moving along very quickly this morning because we have just about another 10 minutes we want to focus this morning. Under causes of stress, the second thing that seemed to be a characteristic that came up time and again was money. Probably some of you can relate to that. Perhaps some of the younger ones don't. But there is the pressure to provide for your family. And that's an honorable task, and yet it is oftentimes a cause of stress. Pressure to have all the toys, not such an honorable thing. You want to keep up with the Joneses. You want to keep up with the people who have the newest snowmobile and the newest vehicle. You want to be able to go on vacation just like the Joneses do, and the list goes on. And there is, of course, the pressure to have security. And we're all aware of the fact that our commercials on television, the people that we talk with constantly present us with the need to have freedom at age 55 or to have a great portfolio that will provide us with the security that we need. And money becomes a source of stress in our lives. Third thing that we're going to talk about is the fact that time often provides a reason for us to be stressed out. Two things in this regard. Time, with reference to getting things done that need to be done and getting the things done that I want to do. And, of course, that can involve a variety of different things from leisure activities to, as we mentioned before, holidays and so on. And then there is a third thing, and that is things that others want me to do. And there are certain pressures that are placed upon us, whether it's by a well-intentioned parent, whether it's by a spouse, whether it's by people who are close to us or those who are distant from us, but there is a desire to try and measure up, if you will, and try and find the time to do the things that others want you to do. Those are some of the categories that I found as I asked the question with a variety of different people, what are the things in your life that cause you stress? Relationships, money, and time. Well, let's ask the question, let's get to the core of the problem. Why ultimately do I get stressed out? Why do I find myself perpetually experiencing stress? I think that there are two answers here. The first one is that we have the wrong priorities. And this is where we get a little bit confused about what matters most in life. Now, we have a list of priorities, things that need to be accomplished, and sometimes they get inverted, and the secondary things become the primary, and the primary becomes secondary. Priorities, wrong priorities, often cause us to experience stress. The other thing that we're going to touch upon is the fact that wrong perceptions also cause stress. And I am fully aware of the fact that there sounds almost a sense of redundancy here when you say what matters and what counts, but there is not a sense of redundancy. What matters tends to be that which we think is truly important in terms of accomplishing, even as Martha felt that she had to go about the task of getting everything done, all the housework, and you saw the imagery that the girls used with the laundry over here and the flowers and perfume over here and the pearls. There is a tremendous contrast in terms of what they felt was the priority. And then the wrong perceptions, what truly counts. And of course, Martha felt that getting the job done is what counted, whereas Mary had a little more balanced perspective, if you will, and she believed that experiencing love and joy and affection was a significant thing. That was truly what counts. Well, if we're truly going to get a handle on stress, how do we do that from a biblical perspective? That's what we want to talk about very briefly. We read from Luke chapter 10, and if you want to follow along, you're welcome to do that. We're going to look at Luke chapter 10 and the two stories that are there. This is a well-known dialogue between Jesus and an expert in the law, someone who had come to question Jesus, and we don't know much about him. In fact, we don't even know what his name was, but we know that he desired to know whether Jesus really knew what he was talking about. And so he poses a very significant question to him. In fact, it's the most significant question that any of us will ever have to answer. What must I do to possess eternal life? If you want to talk about priorities, this is priority number one. What must I do in order to possess eternal life? I think if we can come up with an answer to that question based upon what Jesus says to this individual, then we will have at least the key ingredient to overcoming some of the needless stress in our lives. And I'll qualify that a little bit. Needless stress, because there is natural stress in trying to make the provisions that need to be made and trying to go about the daily tasks. And if you're feeling anxiety over certain things, that's not always bad, but when you change your priorities, when you change your perceptions, and allow the important to be eclipsed with that which is not so important, then you have a difficulty with stress. The Bible's response then to stress, and you're going to say, well, how in the world does the parable of the Good Samaritan have anything to do with dealing with stress? Well, when you take it out of its context, it doesn't have a whole lot to do with it. But when you place it in the context of the answer that Jesus provides to the expert in the law, what's important in life, what's the most important thing in life, what is the most significant thing that I need to do in this world, that is, in order to gain eternal life, then we can gain a new perspective. And Jesus really redefines relationships. And Jesus redefines what is needed in terms of being successful in life through the parable of the Good Samaritan and then through his dialogue with Mary and with Martha. Now, if we look at the background of this story, and it's essential that we do that, the story of the Good Samaritan or the parable of the Good Samaritan involves a journey, a trip from Jericho to Jerusalem. And Jericho is near the Dead Sea, and it is at a level that is 1,300 feet below sea level. And 20 miles away is the city of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem is 2,300 feet above sea level. So just from a very geographical perspective, this is a very difficult journey. In 20 miles, you're going to go on a steep incline of 3,600 feet. Now, not only is that a problem, but there is also a difficulty in that this road is very narrow and it's very windy. And there are all kinds of rocky shoals and crags along the way. And there are places wherein it would be very easy for a robber or for a group of robbers to hide out and to wait for prey that may happen along. And so this illustration that Jesus is using would, to the people to whom he is speaking, have been something that was very clear in their minds. Now, I want you to look as well at the characters that are involved here. And we don't have time to read the story again, but I would encourage you to do that at a later point. I want you to notice, first of all, the traveler. The traveler is someone who is involved in something that perhaps is not a very wise idea. He's not using sound judgment, if you will. He knew better, probably, than to travel that road alone because of how dangerous it was. That road, in fact, up until the early 1930s, was renowned for its danger. In fact, up until the 1930s, people were told that you were not to travel that road unless you were certain that you could make it to your point of destination before dark. It was that difficult a road. In fact, Jerome, in the 5th century, one of our church forefathers, suggested of that particular road that it would be called the Red or the Bloody Way, just because of the circumstances that often took place when people traveled it. The traveler, then, is foolhardy, to say the least. And if there is anybody who's responsible for the predicament that he finds himself in, it's him. Now then comes along the priest. And the priest is an individual who is very concerned with being ceremonially clean. He knows that he is not able to touch a dead body, or he will be unclean and unable to do his job for a period of 7 days. And so he's very cautious. He doesn't think that he better venture over and touch that individual or see whether they're okay for fear he, in fact, be dead and he not be able to carry out his job. He wouldn't be able to do the thing that he was called to do, to perform the ceremonial rites at the temple and to go about the liturgy. He felt, really, that it was more important to be ceremonially clean than it was to care for the genuine need of someone who was destitute and someone who desperately needed his help. He felt that it was more important to go through the ritual than it was to actually have an expression of his heart or make an expression of his heart. The Levite is the second person who happens along in this story. And the Levite, like the priest, realizes that he should not be touching a dead body. But I think his concern is different than the priest because, in fact, Jesus says that he passes to the other side of the road. And I'm taking it perhaps by inference, but nonetheless, it seems that the Levite is very concerned with his own personal safety. He's not so much concerned with ceremonial cleanliness as he is with his own personal safety. And it was probably fairly commonplace for traps to be set up, and maybe someone lay down on the road while their friends hid in caves or wherever, behind the crags, wherever it may be, in order that they might be able to attack. And so he passes to the other side so that he can remain safe. He's not willing to take a risk in any sense, not willing to endanger himself. And then finally there comes along the Samaritan. The Jews who have been listening to the story of Jesus are well aware of the fact that as soon as you get to the Samaritan, you know that this is going to be the person who is the most notorious. This is the villain of the story. It has to be the villain whenever you talk about the Samaritan. Now Jesus was a man, of course, who pulled a few surprises out, and this story is no different. They were certainly expecting him to talk very negatively about the Samaritan, but in fact the opposite was true. The Samaritan went over and he began to administer to the need of the individual who was laying there. In fact, he tended to his wounds and then he took him to an inn and provided for him. And there are a couple of things that we could say very briefly about the Samaritan. One is the fact that he was prepared to help that individual who was in need regardless of the risk or the regardless of the danger that he might experience. The second thing, and we draw this as well from what we see in the text, he seems to have a reputation that precedes him, and that's by inference, but when he goes to the inn and he gives his word that he will be back in a few days' time to pay whatever the need might be or whatever the bill is, the innkeeper takes him at his word, and so his reputation does seem to precede him. Now, you say to yourself, well, that's great. I appreciate the story, but what's it got to do with stress? Well, I want you to know that there is a great paradox in coming to grips or finding handles on the issue of stress. And the paradox is this, that when you take your focus away from yourself and your own problems and you begin to see the needs of others, you will find that you are a lot less stressed. When you begin to take your gaze off of your own difficulties and you begin to look upon others with a sense of compassion and concern, and when you begin to reach out, even if it involves great risk to yourself, you will find that your life will be characterized by less stress, less focus upon self. Stress is usually, not always, but usually concerned with mixed up priorities such as that which we see with the priest. His priority, of course, was being of pure ceremonial service, going about his job the right way, being pious and proper, and perhaps in a sense, another issue that greatly concerns most of us, being successful in the eyes of other people. His priority was to get to his job and to do his job right, and he had a busy schedule to keep. Remember the issue of time? Remember the issue of resources? He probably thought, if I take an interest in this man, I'm probably going to end up footing the bill for some of the needs that he has. And yet, here was a man who was pious. Here is a man who was religious. Here is a man who was esteemed in the eyes of people and yet unwilling to reach out, to venture out. And what he was really saying was, you're not a priority. I wonder, have we ever said that to our kids, perhaps? You know, they have a need. There's some homework that they need help with. And I've got 101 other things to do, just as Martha did in our story earlier in our drama. And we put them way down the list. As soon as I get this done, honey, just wait till I get this done. You've probably been there. I've been there many times. And when we take the focus off of ourselves and the things that we need to get done, and we begin to place the focus upon the needs of others, whether it be our children or whether it be our neighbor across the street who needs a boost because their battery has gone dead, or whatever the case may be, we find that we're a little bit less stressed because the focus is no longer on self. And so you see, this story does have a great deal to do with how we handle stress. The Samaritan understood that it was dangerous, yes, it was risky for him to do what he did. It was going to be costly. Yes, it was going to be costly for him to reach out in love and perhaps provide for the need of that particular individual. But it was going to cost him something more, and perhaps it's the most precious quantity that's available in our particular culture, and that is time. It was going to take him a little bit of time. He was going to have to be sidetracked. He was actually going to have to spend a little bit of time focusing on the needs of others rather than on his own needs, not pursuing that road that he had to follow so that he could get to that appointment that he had to keep so that he could please that person that he was supposed to meet with, and the list goes on. What do we gain from this particular story? We gain this. If we want to come to grips and find a handle on stress, one of the ways that we can do it is by taking the focus off of ourselves and placing it upon our neighbor. Who is our neighbor? Anyone who has need. Even if the reason that they are in need, and this won't go over very well with some political parties, I can assure you, even if the reason they have need is because of their own difficulties because they brought it upon themselves. Perhaps they've been foolhardy. Traveling the road from Jericho to Jerusalem by oneself was a very foolhardy thing to do. It was a stupid thing to do. And yet, the Samaritan saw reason to reach out and to meet the need. And Jesus says to us, that's what I expect. Love your neighbor as yourself. Let me just draw these up here. Taking the risk to reach out, a willingness to invest time, and a willingness to invest our resources. If we want to overcome stress in our own lives, focusing upon others, loving our neighbor as ourselves, taking the risk to reach out to them, being willing to invest time, even though you realize that you're one of the busiest people alive, you're willing to invest time and invest resources. I'm sure that the Levite and the priest probably felt very sorry for this man, but that didn't measure up in Jesus's stand, from Jesus' perspective. They needed to do more than that. The Samaritan was the one who did. Second story that we're just going to touch on, because we're already out of time, is this. The story of Mary and Martha. And this passage is intentionally tied with the preceding passage. That's why we're looking at two stories. Luke wants to illustrate what Jesus said to the expert in the law. That the two most significant things in life, if you want to inherit eternal life, you must love your neighbor as yourself, but the first priority was what? First priority was to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your strength, with all your mind, with all your energy. And so that's what we see illustrated in the story of Mary and Martha. Now, there are lots of Marthas here this morning, I'm sure. But the first thing I want to mention is just the wrong perception of Martha. And Laurel really provided a great example of that. Needed to get things done. Always focus on the busyness of life. We have a tendency to do that, or at least I have a tendency to do that, and probably another 50% plus of you out there this morning have a tendency to find themselves in the category of Martha. Type 1 personality, some of them. You got to take control. You got to make sure that the job gets done and it gets done right. And Martha believed that Jesus was coming to town and everything needed to be perfect. And yet, when you look at the context of this story, this happens just days before Jesus is to die in Jerusalem. And what he was really looking for was a break, a respite, or a retreat from the crowds that were pressing in on him. And that's what's so significant about the response of Mary. She knew that. She knew that Jesus didn't care whether he had a big spread of food put out for him, whether the house was clean and tidy. He was looking for close, intimate friendship and fellowship. And that's what Mary provided. Now, I don't want to suggest to you, and I'm not in any way suggesting to you, that there's no merit in what Martha did. Quite the opposite. There was great merit in what she did, but it was the wrong priority at that particular moment in time. She demonstrated wrong perception of what was important. And so instead of ministering to Jesus by expressing her closeness and friendship, she decided she would go about the work that needed to be done in order to make sure that his visit was a success outwardly rather than inwardly. That doesn't preclude that there are different ways of worshiping. And we'll close with this morning. There are different ways of worshiping, and some of us like to do that by intellectual stimulation, by reading a book, focusing upon the nature of God, perhaps, learning more about him. Perhaps some of us would even take a course at the Bible college, you know, the local Bible college, so that we can worship the Lord by knowing more about who he is and what he expects of us. Some of us would busy ourselves with work in the church, and that is ministry too, and that is worship. Some of us have a tendency to always feel that the private devotional time that we have from 6:45 to 7 in the morning is real worship, and it is, but it's not the only form of worship. All of them are acts of worship as we prostrate ourselves before God, as we express our love and affection for him. the priority of Mary. Mary knew exactly what should take place in the life of Jesus at that particular moment in time. And I'll challenge you just briefly now at the end with the application. How do we apply these principles, the principle of having the right priority and the right perception about what matters and what counts? Well, as a church recently, as a pastoral team, even before that, we looked at our purpose statement. What should we be doing? What is significant in terms of the ministry of the church? And one of the key ingredients is the Great Commandment, which is precisely what we've been looking at this morning. The Great Commandment, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And the challenge I leave with you this week is one way, perhaps, that you can relieve stress in your life. I would like you to take a moment, and Lloyd's going to come in just a minute's time and close our service with song. I want you to reflect upon ways in which that you can be relieving stress by focusing upon the needs of your neighbor rather than focusing upon your own needs, just as the Good Samaritan did. And focusing upon worshiping at the feet of Jesus, just as Mary did in our little vignette that we had earlier. And if you can do that, and if you can apply those principles this week, I believe that you'll experience a little less stress in your life, because you take the focus off of yourselves and you place it upon the worship of Christ and upon meeting the needs of your neighbor, even as Jesus has called us to.